Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Hey Amud Aleph. The Gemara is here to continue to discuss the Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's statement at the end of the Mishnah that if any person who decides they want to be a Talmud Chacham, this is a good time to pretend to be a Talmud Chacham, which is that you can take on the minhag of Talmidei Chachamim, which is not to work on Tisha B'Av. The basic premise is that you're not taking any privileges. By becoming a Talmud Chacham here, you're not overstepping your bounds. You're not taking any benefits of being a Talmud Chacham. You're just accepting a minhag, which is a good minhag, which is not to work on Tisha B'Av. So we allow, or we say it's okay to pretend to be a Talmud Chacham in this case, because the end result is something that we think is beneficial or proper. So now the Gemara says, Lememra, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Savar Lo Chayshin on the Yura. It sounds from this that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel does not worry about the problem of Yehura. Yehura is a more general issue of people acting, loosely, the term is haughty, but acting in a manner that goes against the tide. Someone who makes it clear that they're different than other people, takes on additional stringencies, additional chumrot, but are not necessarily apt or apropos for this individual. So you are, right, whether you're doing it for the wrong reasons, whether you don't qualify, whether you don't have, as Rashi says, you need to have a yirat chait and prishut, I mean, that it's a certain personality, a certain persona that we would expect to do these things, and you are taking them on or doing them without having that full personality or full persona that makes it right for you to do this. Rabbanan Savre Chashin in the Yura. And the Rabbanan our Mishnah, who obviously are disagreeing with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, do worry about the problem of Yura. Where it says, Vayib Chashmin Lohu. Then we hear just the opposite back in the Gemara in Brachot. That's not. Chatan, im yirtze lekrot kriyat shema laila rishon no koreh. A chatan, if he decides on the first night of his wedding, he wants to say kriyat shema, then he can go ahead and do it. Shimon Gamliel amar lo kol arotzeli tol tashem ito. Can't just willy-nilly have kabbalat o machut shemayim. So over there we worry about, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, we worry about Yura. We worry about you acting in such a manner that you are so close to Hashem. You are such a yirei chait. And as Rashi says again, and act with such prishut that you can't go one night without having kabbalat ol machut shemayim. And therefore, you're saying kriyat shema. Despite the fact that nobody else does this, you're doing it. He says, you can't do that. That's taking a privilege, taking on a shame or a persona that you don't really have. Whereas the chachamim say, go ahead. You want to say kriyat shema? Say kriyat shema. So how come here we have the opposite positions? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan mechlefet ha-shita, eino chanami. Tana got their positions backed up or switched around. And if you flip their positions, they'll match up. Shisha braid the Ravidi Amar, lo tipoch, you don't have to flip the positions. The Rabbanan lo kasho, the Rabbanan not a stira, hocha, kevin to kuli alma abde melocha, bihu lo avid, maxek yura. Over here, he's going against the tide. He's going against what everyone else is doing. So therefore, it looks like Yehura. Avahotam, kevin to kuli alma kari, bihu nami kari, he's joining the klau, lo maxek yura. Then it doesn't look like Yura. Yehura is only when you stand out, when you make yourself different than everyone else. But when you're a part of the klau, then that's not called Yehura. Even though that's going against what most people do, nevertheless, because that's what everyone's doing, then that's not considered Yehura. So the Chachamim look at the issue as vis-a-vis the klau. What is the rest of the tzibur doing? If the rest of the tzibur is doing something and then you join them, that's not considered to be Yehura because you won't stand out. On the other hand, if you do something that goes against the grain, then that's something called Yura, because you're making yourself different than everyone else. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Lokasho, is also not a question, because he views Yura in a different context. He says, Hatam du be'inan kavana. Over there, by Kriyat Shema, you need kavana. Va'anan sa'adei lo matzi kavnei date. And we know that he can't concentrate. He's taking on a Chumrah is taking on a stringency and saying, I can concentrate despite the fact that nobody else can, then it's Mechzik Yura. So we look at it vis-a-vis the action itself, not vis-a-vis the klal, vis-a-vis everyone else, but vis-a-vis the Maisa itself, the Maisa Mitzvah. What does it require from you to do this Mitzvah? With Kriyat Shema, it requires you to be different than everyone else in the Maisa. Aval Hocha, lo Mechzik Yura. But over here, it doesn't look like Yura. Amrei Melochei Deleitle, Pokhazi, Kama Vatlane, Ika Bishuka. He says, over here, just because you're not doing work, that doesn't mean that you're doing anything special in the Maaseh. There are plenty of people who are idle, who are unemployed, who don't have work, and are not working. You're not doing anything in terms of your action that makes it that it is Yehura. So the difference between them is that their definition of Yehura is different. The Chachamim, Yehura all has to do with your relationship to the cloud, to the Tzibur. And if you are against or different than the Tzibur, that's a problem of Yehura. So the Chachamim define it that way. Therefore, by Kriyat Shema, there's no Yehura. Over here, there is Yehura. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel looks at Yehura as simply being vis-a-vis the Maaseh itself. What are we demanding of you, or what does this action demand of you? By Kriyat Shema, it demands of you to do something that other people are not capable of. So that's called Yehura. Over here, we're asking you to do something where there are plenty of other people doing this, not for the same reasons, but they're doing it, and it doesn't make you, vis-a-vis this Maaseh, be different, because you have people unemployed, people are idle, people don't work, retired, whatever it is, and this doesn't make you, vis-a-vis the Maaseh, do something that other people are not doing. So because their definition of Yehura is different, they come up with a different position with regards to Kriyat Shema versus Tisha B'Av. Alright, next Mishnah, Chachamim Omrim. Chachamim say, now this is really a continuation of the Mishnah earlier in the Masechta. The Mishnah earlier in the Masechta said that when it comes to Erev HaPesach, we had the Minhag where they do Malacha on Erev HaPesach, and then we have a Minhag where they don't do Malacha on Erev HaPesach. Now the Chachamim Omrim, V'yuda yosim malacha barvei pesachim ad chatzot, u'b'galil lo yosim kol ikar. So here's the difference really derives from not minhag makom, where which makom has the minhag to do malacha, which makom has the minhag not to do malacha, but rather has to do with where you are. There are specific locations that have the minhag and other locations that don't. And that is in Yehuda, they do malacha on Erev Pesach. Whereas in the Galil, they didn't do malacha on the Erev Pesach. So it's not just your location. We have specific locations that have these specific minhagim. That's what the Chachamim say. Yehuda and Galil are those two different areas. Don't just say anything, but these two areas are the areas that have this minhag. Balayla, at night. What about the night of the 14th? Orle Abasar, the night of Bedika. What's the story there? Beit Shammai Usrim, Beit Hillel Matarim Ad Netzach Chama. Shammai says that there's also an Isur Malacha at night, whereas Beit Hillel says it starts from sunrise of the morning. Right. Nothing to do with Bedikat Chametz. This is just an independent Makok. Now, obviously, it's according to the ones who say that the minhag is not to do malacha in the morning, then you have to talk about nighttime. If you have minhag to do malacha during the day until chatzot, then obviously the nighttime is not relevant. Although now Gemara is going to try to separate between these issues because of the language used over here, which is mikara tana minhoga. Chamim talk about a minhag, usof tana yisura. Whereas in the latter half of the Mishnah, Beit Shammai Usrim talks about isur. So then maybe these are not correlated. Maybe Beit Shammai has a totally different opinion because he's talking about Isur and Heter versus Minhag. Isur and Heter are things that involve a halachic issue rather than a issue of custom. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan Kasha, Ha Rabbi Meir, Ha Rabbi Yehuda. The difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether the issue at hand is a Minhag or the issue at hand is Isur Veheter, the Tanya. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda yosim malacha barvei psachim ad chatzot. Megalil en yosim kol ikar. So here you have Rabbi Yehuda saying that in the Yehuda, they do malacha until Erev Pesach, until Chatzot, Galil, Eino Sim Kol Yikar. Amalo Rabbi Meir. Ma Raya, Yehuda V'Galil Lekan. What does it have to do with Yehuda or the Galil? Ela, Makom Shenagu Lasot Malacha, O Sim. Makom Shenagu Shelo Lasot, Eino Sim. It's all dependent on Minhag. Why are you giving definitions to Yehuda and Galil? It has to do with the Minhag. Now, that type of question of Rabbi Meir is not really a question, because all Rabbi Yehuda was saying is that the Minhag in Yehuda is this way, and Minhag in Galil is this way. So what is Rabbi Meir asking him? So that's what the Gemara is medayik here. It must be that Rabbi Yehuda's position is completely different than Rabbi Meir, which is midgamer Rabbi Meir minhoga. In fact, the Rabbi Meir questions through Minhag, Michal the Rabbi Yehuda asira kamar, that Rabbi Yehuda is dealing with Isura, that Rabbi Yehuda is dealing with something different. Because if his question was simply, what do you mean? It's all about Minhag. Rabbi Yehuda didn't say anything different. Rabbi Yehuda said Minhag is like this in Yehuda, Minhag is like this in Galil. So what, you argue about where the Minhag is? That's not a reason to question the position of Rabbi Yehuda. That's let's go out and see. That's let's go check the evidence. What are they doing in Yehuda? What are they doing in Galil? What's the Minhag? You can check into that. But if Rabbi Yehuda's position is completely different, which is that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's Isser Veheter, that this is Halacha Psuka versus Minhag, then Rabbi Meir has a serious question on him. He says, wait, you think the Halacha is this way? This is Isser Veheter? Versus Minhag? No, I think the whole issue is a Minhag issue. And that's what the Gemara concludes here, that Rabbi Yehuda thinks it's an issue of Isura, and Rabbi Meir thinks it's an issue of Minhaga. Does Rabbi Yehuda Abasar Mutar Basiat Melacha? Does Rabbi Yehuda really believe that there is such a heter of Asiat Melacha on the 14th? Vatanya. Rabbi Yehuda says, Aminachesh Vishlo Shasar. someone who is weeding his field, whatever, his grain field, he's weeding the field on the 13th. Venekra biyado. And while he's weeding, he happens to pull out some good stuff as well. He doesn't just pull out the weeds, he pulls out some stalk of grain. Now why is that a problem? The problem here is that we're up against the Omer. The Karban HaOmer is going to be brought on the 16th of Nisan. The Karban HaOmer is matir, anything that is already rooted. Anything that's rooted in the ground, the Karban HaOmer makes into yashan instead of chadash. You just yanked this thing out of the ground. Now you got to get it back in the ground so that it's rooted before the Omer. We know that it takes 3 days for something to be kolet, to take root in the ground. So over here, by accident, you pulled it out. So he says, shotlah b'makom atit, you should plant it back. When you reinsert it back into the ground, make sure you put it in an area that is very moist, wet, muddy. Vein shotlah b'makom agrid, or garid. Don't put it in a place that is dried out. Because in a place that it's wet, it will take root much faster than in a dried out area. B'shloshasar in, b'vasar lo. On the 13th, he allows you to do it, but not on the 14th. Why does he bring the case as being a case where you're weeding on the 13th, and then you put it back in? Why doesn't he have the same situation with the weeding on the 14th? On the 14th, you should be able to accomplish the same thing. Michte. Shemini le Rabbi Yehuda damar. Kor akavah she'enu kuletet l'shloshe yamim, shuv enu kuletet. Any, here it's grafting, but really means anything where you place something into the ground and you want it to take hold or take root. If it doesn't take root within 3 days, it doesn't take root. Meaning that you need the rooting to take 3 days. If you have 3 days, you're fine. Because it will take root. If it doesn't work in that time, the thing's going to die. It's not going to make it. So if you have 3 days, and it's still there after 3 days, and it's alive, you know it took root, and you're fine. So if you think you do melacha on the 14th, then why is this case on the 13th? Vayika, if you were did this on the 14th, arbeisar, v'chameshar, umiksat shitzar. On the 14th itself, you could have put it back in the ground. So you have the 14th is one day, the 15th is day two, and then you have a part of the 16th till the Omer is brought. So mixadayom kakulo. So I have 3 days here. So why doesn't he bring whole cases? Amenachesh ba'arbasar. Why does he make it amenachesh b'shloshasar? So obviously it is a case where he thinks you can't do malacha on the 14th. So amarova b'galil shanu. Says no, that's the case where it's in the Galil. We just saw from Yehuda, he thinks that in the Galil it's problematic. In Yehuda, they didn't have that problem. So he was speaking in the context of the Galil. Vayka lelio. Wait a minute, what about at night? Even in the Galil, he says the restriction is in the daytime on the 14th. In the Galil, they're usher to do work on the 14th during the day, but the night before, you could have done work. So in the Galil, why don't we say that he was weeding on the night of the 14th, and he pulled it out, and he could stick it back in. Why is he on the 13th? So Amar Rav Sheshit says, Gebet Shammai. That's like Beit Shammai, who says, no malacha even on the night of the 14th. Now, we don't love that type of answer, because that means that Rabbi Yehuda is taking a position with Rabbi Shammai, which we don't want to do necessarily, because we know the halacha is not like Beit Shammai. So why would you want to set up the halacha in that way? Vashi amar, lolam ki Beit Hillel. The halacha is like Beit Hillel. Fish ain't dark kan shel bnei adam nachesh balayla. It's not like today where you can bring out spotlights and you can work at night. Working at night is very difficult when you don't have lighting. So nobody goes out and weeds at night. Although over here, it might be possible because you are at the 14th, where you're very close to the full moon, where you do have nighting at night, you know, the equivalent in the fall time of the harvest moon. But here you have the spring moon, you have a nearly full moon, you might be able to do it at night. But he says in general, which I assume was correct, they didn't go out and weed at night. So he's just talking about the practical situation. On the 14th, in the Galil, you can't do work. So the 13th during the day, already, then it's relevant to talk about it. The 14th at night, there's not relevant to speak about it. And that's why. Ravina Amar the Olam Biyuda. Ravina says, even in Yehuda we can explain this. Ubahash Rasha. And we're talking about the rooting of the item. Chad Mixatayom, Kukulu Amrinan. We're talking about rooting. You could say one Mixatayom. But, Shrei Mixatayom Kukulu, Lo Amrinan. But 2 half days, we don't count. If you say it's on the 14th, then if he rips it out on the 14th and puts it back, he only has half a day on the 14th. Full day on the 15th, half a day on the 16th. So what you're ending up saying is that Mixatayom Kukulu for the 14th, Mixatayom Kukulu for the 16th, and the whole day of the 15th. That means you really, in the end, only have 2 days in total. He says, Mixatayom Kukulu, we can only add one time, you'll say it. 2 times, we do not say it. And the one exception to this rule about Trey, Mixatayom Kukulu, is that by Avelut, where we always build Derech HaMekil, we do say Trey Mixatayom Kukulu. That means if you start Avelut late in the day, after the mate is buried, people generally try to sit right away before Shkia, in order that counts as 1 day of Shiva, and then the last day of Shiva, you get up in the morning. So that's one location we do say Trey Mixatayom Kukulu. Otherwise, we do not apply that. Generally, halachically, we do not invoke the principle of Trey Mixas Ayom Kikulo. David's question is a relevant question, which is, Mixas Ayom Kikulo is a halachic term. So how does that affect the reality? Now Chazal and other places say it does affect reality. Chazal posed that question with regards to what we have this year, which is a leap year. When we have a leap year, Chazal say, wait, does that change the biology of an individual? Talking about bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, but the fact that they're going to become a gadol on a year that's a leap year, because all of a sudden they make it into a leap year, their aging is going to change in that year, and Chazal say, yes, yes, that it makes a difference, that halakhic reality has impact on nature, that you expect the summer will come in early, the winter will go late, meaning that the leap year makes a difference to these items in the real world when the halakhic impact happens. So the answer is yes. Chazal do believe that it has real impact or agricultural impact. But again, Mixat Ayom Kekulo, you have to ask, there's a Chakira in general, what does it mean, Mixat Ayom Kekulo? Do we view Mixat Ayom Kekulo means that, literally, we view that the portion of the day that you do it makes as if you did that entire day. And if you really wanted to, you could keep that entire day, like for instance by Avelut. It's your choice. Mixat Ayom Kekulo is a heter to say, you want to get up in the morning, you're done. Because it's as if you sat the whole day. But if you really wanted to sit the whole day, you could. Or do you view Mixat Ayom Kekulo as being an absolute? Meaning that we demand of you that you do Mixat Ayom, and that is defined as Kulo, but it's not that you're allowed to keep the Kulo. It's the Mixat Ayom is the end. That's it. That's sufficient. And that would be the same question over here, and it seems to lean more to that side, that it's sufficient. That Mixat Ayom is, that's enough. That's what makes it the end. It's not like, oh, that's the entire day agriculturally, but rather the Mixat Ayom is sufficient to get you there. So 2.5 days, you could say, a half day, and one ends up being 2 days. You should have said 2 days instead of 3 days. So that's maybe over there. Here it takes that aside of the Chakira and what Mixat Ayom Kekulo is. Right, next Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Melacha Sheitchil Ba Kodem La'Basar, Gomra Ba'Basar. You started work before the 14th, you can finish it on the 14th. Avo Yatchil Ba B'Tchilat Ba'Basar, but you may not begin to do work on the 14th itself. Even though you can finish it on the 14th, you cannot begin it. There are three professions that can work until Chatzot on Erev Pesach. These are them. Achayatin, which are tailors. Hasaparim, barbers. Vakovsim, and the launderers. Also, they, whether it's leather workers or cobblers, they also can work here. Obviously, these are things that are necessary for the Pesach itself, for the holiday itself, things that people need last-minute adjustments and need them to be ready for the Moed. So therefore, we say they can work on the day itself.
You can make soup.
People didn't buy out, didn't have takeout in their day. That wasn't anybody who cooked their own food, basically. Bakers were the one thing that maybe had commercial, but here it wasn't really relevant because... That's what they're eating that night. They're not eating other food, and the other shkita you don't do in advance. They didn't have refrigeration. It wasn't due that you're preparing food in advance. All food was prepared on the spot. I mean, that's what the whole idea of heter ochal nefesh is on Yom Tov. So this type of thing was, I don't think it's as relevant to them as being like they, where we prepare everything in advance. That's not as relevant to them. So now, there is a question about this Mishnah, with regards to where or what situation are we speaking about in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking in a broad context. It says, oh, you can finish work, or it's saying that you cannot start work. What are we talking about? Are we talking about a makom, shalom nalgu lasot melacha? Are we talking about every place? Are we talking about makom that it's iser melacha? It's not clear here from the Mishnah. Rashi seems to take a position that we're to be talking about a case, b'chol makom, as he says. Doesn't matter if they have an iser melacha, doesn't matter if they don't have an iser melacha. These are what it seems to be, umaniyot. This seems to be melacha that is significant enough that it applies even to places that are noheg, isur melacha.
If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, Gomra ba'basar, it's the top Rashi. I feel of a makom, shano lagu lasot melacha. Even a place that they're not noheg, do melacha. Rashi says, Gomra ba'basar is even in a place, shlo nagu lasot melacha. In a place where they didn't amenak do melacha, you can finish it off. The Rambam, on the other hand, seems to go to the side that which
is only relevant in a dafka in a place, shenagu lasot milacha. And that's what the Rambam says in Perisha Mishnah. The dafka makom shenagu. Magin Mishnah says that the Rambam's position makes sense here because if it was talui b'minhag, then that's what you have to question here. Was this umaniyot talui b'minhag or not talui b'minhag? So therefore, it must be we're talking about a place where there is no minhag of isur milacha. Obviously, as we said before, Rashi can say that these melachot are so significant or so important to the Moed that even in a makom that there's an Easter melacha, these override when it comes to Gemar melacha. Bnei Yeshua says that the Rambam was medayek this from the fact that the Mishnah over here by the Chachamim mentions Ad Chatzot, but in the position of Rabbi Meir doesn't mention Ad Chatzot, which makes it sound like Rabbi Meir's position is across the board. It's considered to be problematic no matter what your position is with regards to Melacha on Erev Pesach. You cannot begin Melacha.
Although it is Rabbi Meir's position, and we just saw before, Rabbi Meir says it's Talui B'Minhaga, right? Because that was Rabbi Meir's position versus Rabbi Yehuda's position before. We saw it was Talui B'Yisura. So the Mishnah before, where we discussed that, we said the half that was talking about Minog was Rabbi Meir, and the half that was talking about Isur was Rabbi Yehuda. Question of this Mishnah in the context of that, what does that mean? So Rabbi Meir the Shitato would say that it's talking about Minhag, and that's the way Rashi reads it. The Rambam, on the other hand, does not read it that way. He reads it as being a problem of Isur. Ready, Bailu. Question is, when we're speaking about here, what type of malacha are we speaking about? Are we speaking about work which is necessary for Yom Tov, and that's what we allow you to complete? But if it wasn't for the Tzorach HaMoed, we wouldn't even let you touch it, not even complete it. Odeh mashlol Tzorach HaMoed tnan. Our mission is talking about something that's not the Tzorach HaMoed, we let you finish. Well, Tzorach HaTchulei Matchilinon. But if it's Tzorach HaMoed, then we even let you start the malacha and do it. Odilma, or maybe the Mishnah's ben l'tzarach ha-moed, ben shlo l'tzarach, migmarin at kulei lo. Maybe it's indifferent to whether it's tzarach ha-moed or not. It's all about the malacha, nothing to do with the tzarach ha-moed. So tashma, avo lo yatchil b'tchila barbasar, afilu tziltzul katan, afilu svacha ktana. He may not start on the 14th, even a small belt. It's interesting, Rashi says, if you look in Rashi, what does he call it, tziltzul? A bendel. So he says, a bendel is a belt, which today is used, is still a term that's used for a belt or a gartel, is a bendel. So now you have tziltzul katan, you're not allowed to make a small belt, even on a basa, and even a small hairnet that is used. Now that's something that would be used on Yom Tov, is tzorach ha-moed, and despite that fact, where it says afilu, these items you're not allowed to do. May afilu, lav afilu hani the tzorach ha-moed, even though these are necessary for the moed, migmarin at chulei lo, we don't let you start them on Erev Pesach. Michlal, you would imply from this, the shalolot tzorech, migmar nami lo gamrinon. That would imply that the only thing you're allowed to finish is something that is tzorech hamoed. Something that's not tzorech hamoed, you can't even finish. Or it says, lo, the olam, shalolot tzorech, migmar nami gamrinon. No. For the shalolot tzorech, you also can end. Umay afilu. So the afilu is afilu hani nami dzutri ninu. Even these items, which are tiny items, the sakadat chamin, I would have thought, hatchalatam zohi gimar malachtan. As you start them, you can finish them, meaning that it's not something that takes a lot of work or investment. You can even start them on Erev Pesach because you're going to finish them right then. That is not the case. So here, the Gemara says, we don't have any proof whether this is Tzorach HaMoed, not Tzorach HaMoed. It could be that the Chiddush of the Braita is teaching us simply that you would have thought that these items are allowed to even start on the 14th because they're so small and they so quickly are finished that maybe you could start because they're starting as if you just finished them today. So maybe that would be allowed. The answer is no. We don't even allow these small items. Beginning is problematic. We don't know if it's a tzorach hamoed, shelo tzorach hamoed, right? That we don't have any definition to. Tashma, another attempt. Rabbi Meir Omer, kol melacha shelo tzorach hamoed, anything that is tzorach hamoed, gumra, barbasa, you can finish it on the 14th. Eimatai, bizman shitchil ba kodem habasar. That's only if you finished, started it before the 14th. Aval lo yitbilcha ba kodem habasar, lo yitchil ba barbasar. You can't start anything on the 14th. Afilu tziltzul katan, afilu svacha ktana. So then, even a small belt, even a small hairnet. The tzorach hamoed in, shelo, the tzorach hamoed lo. So it sounds like from this that, for tzorach hamoed we're speaking about here, because he's talking about a tziltzul katana, svacha ktana, and he's saying, despite the fact you need to start beforehand, it sounds like the whole mission or braita that Rabbi Meir is bringing over here, he's talking about a case where he's nizit l'tzorach ha-moed, and yet we say he must start it before the 14th, otherwise you're not allowed to finish it. So the Gemara concludes from that, l'tzorach ha-moed in, shalom l'tzorach ha-moed lo, means that you can't do anything for no l'tzorach ha-moed, you can't even finish up. Gemara says, no, hu adin, afilu shalom l'tzorach, nami gamrinan, v'akamashman, afilu l'tzorach ha-moed migmar in, ech t'kulei lo. Now the chiddush in this braita is not necessarily that tzorach ha-moed yes, shalom l'tzorach ha-moed lo, it's telling you, no, that even for tzorach ha-moed you can only end. You cannot begin. That's all it's telling you. It's giving you definition that tzorach hamoed is not a heter to do more than that. Still doesn't tell us what the din is versus tzorach hamoed versus shalom tzorach hamoed. It's just telling us for tzorach hamoed you don't have any additional dispensation. So tashma, a third attempt at understanding this. Rabbi Meir Omer, kol melacha shi tzorach hamoed gomra babasar. Shein tzorach hamoed asur. So here we have a pretty explicit statement here from Rabbi Meir that anything that is tzorach hamoed you can finish on the 14th. Shein tzorach hamoed asur. If it's not a tzorach hamoed, you can't do it. V'osim melacha b'arvei psachim ad chatzot. B'makom shenahagu. So now, when there is a place that has a minhag to do malacha, you can't do malacha. So now, makom shenahagu in, lo anagu lo. So in from here, it would sound like, in a place that they're no egg to do it, they can do malacha. A place that they're not no egg, no. Ushma mina, l'tzorach hamoed in, shalo l'tzorach hamoed, lo, shma mina. So here is your conclusion that Rabbi Meir is saying for sure that we're talking about a place that has the heter to do malacha, because they have the minhag to do malacha. And that place where the minhag to do malacha, what do we say? We say that we're talking about a case of Tzorech HaMoed. And Tzorech HaMoed is the only matir over here. Shlo Tzorech HaMoed is not a matir. So the conclusion will be that the Tzorech HaMoed you can finish on the 14th, not even start, because we saw that from the previous Braita. Shlo Tzorech HaMoed, you can't do anything on the 14th, even in a place that has Heter Melacha on the morning of the 14th. That Heter Melacha is only for items that are Tzorech HaMoed. So even in places where they have Heter Melacha, that Heter Melacha is only granted for the work that is the Tzorech HaMoed. Finishing Melacha is only in a place that they were no egg Heter Melacha, not in a place where they're no egg not to do Melacha.
The way I explain the Gemara works well for the Rambam, as we saw before in the Mishnah, that our whole Gemara here is speaking about, or the Mishnah is speaking about a case, b'makom shenagud asot Melacha. That's talking about a place where you have the minhag to do Melacha, and that's what the conclusion of the Gemara is over here. According to Rashi and the other Rishonim who believe that the Mishnah speaks about even a case be'makom shenagu lo lasot melacha, even a place where there is Easter melacha, as you see from the first Rashi on the Amud, then they have to explain this Gemara differently. Most likely, and this is brought by the Rabbeinu David and others here, that the girsa in the Gemara was slightly different, which was the last Braita reads like this: Rabbi Meir Omer gom melacha shi l'tzorach hamoed gomra be'as basar v'she'en l'tzorach hamoed osim melacha barvei psachim ad chatzot. When it's not the Tzorech HaMoed, then you can do that on Erev Pesach HaKatzot b'makom shenagu, in a place that they are no heg. And then the Gemara brings the diok of makom shenagu in, makom shelo nagu lo. And that would conclude that shelo l'Tzorech HaMoed is mutar in places where it's mutar to do malacha on the morning. This heter of Tzorech HaMoed is only relevant to places that have the Isur malacha. And that will reconcile with the way that these Rishonim explain our Mishnah, that the Tzorech HaMoed and the Gomra is relevant to places where there is Isur Melacha, and places where there's Heter Melacha, then it's carte blanche about what you can do, as long as you're not Matchil.
Okay, now, Chamim Omrim, Shlosh Umniyot. Chamim say that these three professions are allowed to work until Chatzot on Erev HaPesach. Tana Chayatim, Shken Hedyot Tofer Kedako B'Cholosh HaMoed. The Chayatim can work, the tailors can work, because Hedyot, a regular layperson, can stitch things up on Cholosh HaMoed, because that's not considered to be a melacha, because a hedyot or layperson, when he stitches, doesn't do melacha tumuniyot, so it's not a problem with Cholosh HaMoed. He's just stitching something up quickly to hold it together until he can get it to the tailor. So since he can do it, now, the way Rashi reads this is, it's a kal v'chomer. Cholosh HaMoed, which is a more stringent or strict time period, we allow some form of stitching. Therefore, in our baser, where it's a much more lenient time, we're going to allow it fully. That's the way Rashi reads it. Right, exactly. It's not exactly kal v'chomer, because there it's melechet hedyot, here it's melechet uman. But Rashi is saying, because we found some form of heter on Cholosh HaMoed, on our baser, we're going to be matir l'gamrei. I might have expressed it, this is the way I would have said it, is that the fact that we have special dispensations on Chol HaMoed, for instance, a layperson can stitch on Chol HaMoed, is an indication that everybody else finished beforehand. That everybody else finished their malacha prior to the moed. Otherwise, why would it be that only melechet hedyot is allowed? The implications are that everybody else got it done before the moed, and that's the proper time to get it done. So I would have suggested maybe that's what the Gemara is after. The fact that this only has special dispensation, not everybody can do it, indicates the proper time to finish this was right before the moed, or prior to the moed, and that's the indication. Right, but Rashi reads it the other way. Hasaparim, Vakobsim, Shekena Babi Medinat Hayam, someone who came from overseas and only lands on Chol HaMoed, he can get a haircut, and he can do his laundry. Even though, again, you were supposed to do it beforehand, now, because he is in this situation where he couldn't have done it beforehand, he has a special dispensation. So Rashi says, since it's mutar on Chol HaMoed, certainly it should be mutar on Arbasa. Again, I would express it as, since these people are the only ones who have a dispensation to do it, means that everybody else did it beforehand or finished it right beforehand. But Yotzei Mibeit Asurim, and also someone who came out of jail, was led out of jail on Chol HaMoed, Misaprim Mechamsim Mishchol Chol HaMoed. They all have this dispensation to get haircuts and launder on Chol HaMoed, because they didn't have the opportunity to do it before HaMoed. The only regalim are allowed to fix their shoes on polo shom moed because they obviously need to walk. They need to walk back, right? They need to get back. They need to be able to go. So, b'maikem iflagei. What's their machloket here? Meaning that obviously the chachamim only think there's three, and they don't have this fourth umanut. So, my sabbat lemedim tchilat malacha misof malacha. One of them thinks that the tchilat malacha teaches you something about the sof malacha. My sabbat lemedim tchilat malacha misof malacha. We don't learn out the beginning of the malacha from the sof malacha. So what is sof melacha? Sof melacha means that you're allowed to fix shoes on cholosho moed. So fixing shoes is a sof melacha. You have a shoe that's intact, and now it has a little problem with it, you fix it up. Tchila melacha means you're making a new shoes. You're actually creating shoes from scratch, starting out from scratch. So the question is, on cholosho moed, the only heter we have is to fix shoes that are problematic. For the olei regalim, you can fix it. If they have a problem with their shoes, you can fix them up. Now I go to before the moed. Before the moed, we're talking about the cobbler is putting together shoes from scratch, meaning new shoes for the moed. So do I learn from cholosh moed, where I'm talking about fixing shoes, to making shoes? Do I extrapolate from one to the other, or do I not extrapolate? And the answer is, Chachamim said we don't extrapolate, because one's talking about fixing shoes, one's talking about making new shoes. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel thinks that, or Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda thinks it's fine to extrapolate in this case, that Tikkun Milalim is enough to allow you to fix. If you can fix it on Cholosh Moed, then you can make new ones on Erev Pesach. Okay, next Mishnah. Moshevim Shovachim L'Tarnagolim B'Yudalit. You can sit down a Tarnagol on Yudalit. The Lashon HaMishnah is a little difficult, which the Gemara will discuss in a second, but Shovachim are bird coats. Generally with a Tarnagolit, you don't have a bird coat, because a Tarnagolit doesn't fly. So Rashi here gives an alternative explanation, which is that ein moshivim shovachim vitarnagolim biyudalid. So the shovachim are the dove goats, and then vitarnagolim, which is that there are two separate dinim that are mentioned here. One is that you can have the dove sit in the dove goats on the eggs, and that the tarnagolim can also, in their place, in the lul, sit on their eggs. So let's loosely translate it now. It's that you want to have eggs that hatch into chicks. So in order to have eggs that hatch into chicks, you need the chicken to sit on the eggs in order to have them become chicks. So here you're allowed to place the chickens on the eggs on the 14th. We allow you to seat them on the eggs in order to have them hatch into chicks. V'tarnagolet shebarcha, and if you have a chicken that ran away, who was warming eggs and ran away, machzirno tali mimkoma, you can bring it back and put it back on the eggs on the 14th. Now, that's the question that the Gemara is going to ask on the Mishnah, which is, well, if you can start them out on the eggs on the 14th, what's the question about putting them back on eggs on the 14th? If you can start from scratch, then certainly you can bring them back, because there's a much greater problem that they left the eggs that they were warming already. So why, that's what's going to draw the problem, or create a problem. The Gemara is going to have to reword this Mishnah. V'meita moshivim acheret tachta. If the chicken dies, you can bring in another chicken to replace it. Korfim mitachet raglei behem abi yudalit. You can sweep away, remove the dung from the animal, from the cow shed on the 14th. And cholosh moed, you can only push it to the sides. You can't remove it entirely. You can just sweep it to the sides. You take your utensils to the artisan, to the craftsman, and return them. Even if they're not dealing with cholosh moed, even if they're not an issue for the moed, again, we'll get to this in the Mishnah and Gemara. What exactly is going over here? Why is it, if it's lolas arkamoid, why you're allowed to bring them? Why you're allowed to deal with this at all? Right. So now the Gemara asks the question: Hashta otuvei mutvinan. You said already in the Mishnah that in Yudalid you can seat the chicken to start with. You can start the process of warming eggs. Adurei mibaye. To return it onto the eggs, you have to tell me about it. It's obvious. So Amar Abaye seifat on the cholosh moed. So one answer is, Abaye says, you're talking about two different time periods. One is Yudalid, one is Cholosh HaMoed. So on Yudalid, you're allowed to start putting the chicken on the eggs. Cholosh HaMoed, you can't start them, but if they were on already, you can return them to the eggs on Cholosh HaMoed. Amar Avuna, Loshanu Elo Toch Shlosha Lamerda. Avuna says that it's only within 3 days of its rebelling, that it left. Dakate lo parach tzimra mina, because the egg is still warm. And the warmth of the chicken on the egg is retained within the egg for those 3 days. But if it exceeds 3 days, the gap, then, after 3 days, the egg is lost totally, so there's no use in putting them back on the egg. So Avuna qualifies that statement that when we're talking about the 3 days, we have two different issues that are going on here. One is, if the chicken's already sat on the egg for less than 3 days, then the egg is still edible. It hasn't transformed enough that the egg is no longer edible. That's number one. So that's in the beginning point. I mean, if the chicken has yet to sit on it for 3 days, then the egg is still an egg. And you can, right, at all. Its total time that it spent on the egg was less than 3 days. Then we don't put it back because the egg is still an egg. Since it's an egg, we don't allow you to put it back on the egg because you're not going to lose it. You can use it as an egg. If it's sat already for 3 days, it's already begun the transformation where it's no longer an egg. It's already transforming into a chick. Right, it's becoming an embryo and it's not going to allow you to eat it. And if we don't let you put the chicken back on it, you're going to lose the egg entirely. So now, at that point, you have to start saying, how long has the chicken been off the egg? If the chicken's been off the egg for 3 days, then the egg is lost already. There's nothing to do. Whereas if the chicken's still within 3 days, the heat's still in there, then it's okay. So that's the two things that we just saw here. Which again, I'll read them again, so now that we've explained it, which is, by lo shanu ala tok shloshad amirda, da kati lo parach tzimra mina, v'char shloshad yishivita, da pseda la be'e legamre. Number one has to be within 3 days from the chicken running away, because there's still heat of the chicken in the egg. Plus, it has to be after that it sat on it already for 3 days, because then the egg will be lost entirely. One of those two scenarios, it'll be lost. If it's either longer than 3 days it's been off the egg, there's no longer any heat, so there's no purpose in putting the chicken back on it, or it's in the first 3 days, it left within 3 days, they never sat on it for a full 3 days, there you're not going to lose the egg entirely, then we're not going to put it back. Even when the first 3 days we put it back. What's their argument over here? So as far as after 3 days that it's left, everybody agrees that there's no purpose of putting the chicken back on. It's lost the continuum of the heat. It's not going to hatch into a chick anymore. So if you had more than 3 day gap between when the chicken sat on it and then you want to put it back on it, everybody agrees that that doesn't work. You don't put it back on because there's no purpose in putting it back on. Their argument is within the first 3 days. Do you have to have 3 days on the egg before it's relevant? Or even with less than 3 days, we'll let you put the chicken back on. So Rav Huna says it's only if it sat on it for 3 days do we allow you then to put the chicken back on. Within 3 days, you can't. If it only sat on less than 3 days, forget it. You can't put it back on. On the other hand, Rav Yami suggesting over here is that even in a case where it sat for less than 3 days, we're going to allow you to put it back on the egg. So what's the difference in their opinion? So Ma'asav Lef said Meruba Chashashu, Lef said Muat Lo Chashashu. Ma'asav Lef said Muat Nami Chashashu. It's a question of how big the loss is for you over here. Now, if it sits on the egg for 3 days, everybody agrees you're going to lose the entire egg. It's already begun the process of transforming into an embryo. It's no longer edible. Nobody eats such an egg. It might even be halachically problematic to eat such an egg. So at that point, everybody agrees you can put the chicken back on. Within the first 3 days, it's begun to change, but it's not fully changed. In that case, if you use it as an egg, some people would eat it as an egg. Other people might not eat it as an egg. So that's the question here. How big is your loss? You're going to lose some money because not everybody's going to eat it. You can't take it to market. You can't sell it to people that are not so makwid, that are not eastness, not so particular, they'll eat such an egg. But that's not a full market. So you're going to lose, you're going to have to discount the egg. Do we say, the discounting of the egg, fine, take a little loss on this, we're okay with that, because we don't want you doing something on moed. Or do we say that a small loss is already enough that we're going to say you can put the chicken back on. And that's a machloket. Rav Huna says a small loss we're willing to accept over here, don't put it back on. Whereas Rav Yami says, no, we're not even willing to accept a small loss over here. In a small amount, we're going to let you put it back on. Rav Huna says, only if you're going to lose the egg entirely will we say that. But if you can get some money out of it, we won't let you put it back on. So that's their machloket over here about returning the chicken, even if it's only sat less than 3 days. All right, next part of the Mishnah is Gorfim Itacha de Beima. You can sweep out the dung. Tana banan. Hazevel shebechatzer, the zevel that's in the chatzer, the dung that's in the chatzer, v'salkino tol etzadadin. Then you can push it to the sides. Sheberefet, shebechatzer, motzino tol ashpa. The ones that are in the cow shed, that is in the chatzer, you take him out to the ashpa. Hagufa kasha. You have an internal contradiction in this statement in the Braita. Amar zevel shebechatzer v'salkidin otel etzadim. The zevel in the chatzer you're going to push to the sides. V'hadar tani, then you said shebechatzer in the cow shed in the chatzer motzino otel ashpa. You can take it out. So which one is it in the chatzer? Can you just push it to the sides or can you take it out? So Amar Abayi lo kasha. Kan b'yudal kan b'cholosho moed. Again, Abayi does the same differentiation that he did in the previous part of our Mishnah, which is that we're dealing with two different time periods. On your Dalit, you can take it out entirely. On Cholo Shomoed, you can only push it to the sides. Rav Amar, Hava Hava Cholo Shomoed. These are both on Cholo Shomoed, Vachi Kamar. This is what it means. Im Naseh Chatzer Kerefet, Motzino Tole Ashpa. And if the Chatzer starts to look like the Refet, then you can take it out to the Ashpa. Meaning that it's equivalent on Shabbat of Geref Shorei. On Shabbat, we say a Geref Shorei. If your house becomes like a dump, we allow you to remove things that are otherwise muksa. Things like garbage, which is otherwise mukseh on Shabbat, If it makes it unpleasant or unlivable in your house, we allow you to remove the garbage from the house because it becomes something that's ruining the Shabbat. So to over here, you're allowed to push the dung to the sides on Chol HaMoed. We don't do your full work of taking it out to the garbage, taking it out to the dump. But if there's so much dung now in the chatzer that your chatzer no longer feels like a chatzer, starts to feel like a refit, starts to feel like a cow shit, then we allow you to move it entirely because your chatzer is no longer functional as a chatzer. So the question of how much we allow you to do in Chol HaMoed is, what is the inconvenience? If it's simply that, okay, you have to push it to the sides, this chatzer is still usable, then fine. If it's a point where the chatzer is no longer usable, then we say, okay, you can remove it entirely on the Chol HaMoed. Alright, now, next part of the Mishnah. Molchim kelim avim may be to Uman. You can take your kelim to the Uman, and you can bring them back from the Beit Uman. I'm Rav Papa. Badiklan Rava. Rava checked us, meaning that he tested us. Rav Papa, being a Talmud of Rava, is saying that Rava, in Shir, was asking us this question. Molchim avim kelim beit Uman. Afu bishin natsar chamoed. You're allowed to bring and take these kelim from the Beit Uman, even though it's not Tzorach HaMoed. Viriminu. We have another Tanaic work which seems to present a problem. You're not allowed to bring the kelim from the Beit Uman. And if you're worried they're going to get stolen, meaning that if you leave them there at the house of the craftsman, they're going to get stolen, and you can take them to another chatzer. You won't leave them with him. Umishaninan. And we answered, lo kasho. There's no stira here. Kan ba'abasar, kan b'cholo shol moed. The same answer that Abai has given all along. There's a difference between the 14th and the cholo shol moed. On the 14th, you can take them back and forth. You can do whatever you want. You want to get them out of his house? Fine. Cholo shol moed, there, we have a limitation. You can't bring them back, but if you're worried about, first of all, you can't take them there. Second of all, if you want to bring them back because you're afraid they're going to get stolen, then we allow you to move it to chatzer acheret. We don't allow you to take it home. We allow you to move it to another chatzer. Vi ba'itema. And some say, haba haba cholo shol moed. Again, like in each of the previous answers, we say, no, they're both talking about Chol HaMoed, but there's a distinction here. Lokasha, kan b'mamino, kan shebe'mamino. Depends if you trust the craftsman or not. If you trust the craftsman, then we insist that you leave it there. Whereas, if you don't trust him, then we allow you to take it out or bring it out. So the Gemara says, v'atanyo, mevin kelim mebeit uman, kagon. We allow you to bring things back from the Beit Uman. Could go on Kad Beit Hakadar. We allow you to bring back the pitcher or the barrel from the house of the barrel maker. Akos Mi Beit Hazagag. The cup, goblet from the house of the glass maker. Avalot Semri Beit Hatzeva. We don't allow you to bring wool back from the dyer. Vokelim Beit Uman. And not utensils from the Beit Uman. Imein lo mayuchal, noten lo scharo. If the Uman does not have what to eat, you can pay him so that he has money to eat or to use for Yom Tov. And he leaves it there. If he doesn't believe him, and then he puts him in the house next door. If they worry about them being stolen, then he can bring them back to his own house. So Taratzta Mevin. Tanya here is Benichuta. Do you explain this issue of Mamin? Do you believe him or don't believe him? So when you believe him, may he tell you to leave it there. Whereas, if you don't believe him, we say you can bring it out, you can do much more. So great, you explain one aspect here of the Braita, or the Mishnah, which is this aspect of bringing it back to you. But our Mishnah says, Molichin, you're allowed to take these items to the Beit Uman. Taking the Beit Uman has nothing to do with believability over there. Believability is not going to solve your problem. So that's the question. Taratz the Mevin, Molichin Kasha. Diktani, Ein Mevin, Vekoshkein, De Ein Molichin. Elamel Chavarta, Kedashanina, Miikara. It's clear that the original answer is the right answer. It's the difference between the 14th and Cholo Shel Moed. Because within Cholo Shel Moed, we can't make such a difference. Because if Ein Mevi'in, then certainly Ein Molichin. So if Ein Molichin, that means that one bright is saying Ein Molichin, the other bright is saying Molichin. Please explain to me the difference and why you're allowed to take something to the Uman on Cholo Shel Moed. The answer is, I don't have an answer to that. If I don't have an answer to that, then this answer of being on Cholo Moed is not a proper answer. The real answer is the difference between the 14th and Cholo Moed, and that's the only way we can distinguish over here. Similar to what Abaye did in the previous cases in the Mishnah, which is on the 14th, you have a greater dispensation to do things. On Cholo Shel Moed, you're much more restricted because the rules of Cholo Moed are much stricter than that of the 14th. Okay, we'll stop over here.